It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. Welcome to this hour of adventure. Later in the hour, we'll hear The Fighting O'Flynn on the Screen Director's Playhouse. But right now, Orson Welles stars in The Lives of Harry Lime, the syndicated recording from October 12, 1951, called The Golden Fleece.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man, yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. No. He had many lives. And I can tell you about all of them.
How?
Because my name is Harry Lime.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the Third Man, in today's story, The Golden Fleece.
Well, it's a queer story, no matter how you look at it. It begins with a bullfight. It ends with a naval engagement on the China Sea. There's a woman in it, of course. Have another drink?
All right, if you are.
Two gin slings, boy.
Yes, sir. Two gin slings.
It all started in the little seaport of Algeciras. Like every other town in Spain, there's a bullring there. I don't know how you feel about bullfights, but if it's Sunday in Spain, it's a little hard to stay away from them. A bullfight is to Spain what an opera is to Italy. It's the only thing in the country that starts on time. I'd been dawdling over my shellfish and beer, so when I got in for the second faena, Soldadito was in the ring. He was younger then and braver than he is now, but I've never been one of his fans. Too much ballet dancing for me and not enough bullfighting with... We won't go into that. I could talk about the corrida all night, but I promised you a story about adventure on the high seas. It's beginning right now. Soldadito is dedicating the bull. He is paying this compliment to the lady who is seated next to me. For the first time, I glance at her, and the glance freezes into a stare. She has very dark red hair, very pale ivory skin, and very bright yellow eyes. I mean, really yellow, like a cat's. I won't dwell on her. I'd like to, but I won't. Suffice to say that this kid could stop traffic on the Indianapolis Speedway. The bullfighter turns, tosses his hat to her in the classical gesture over the shoulder, and moves out into the sunlight toward the bull. But as far as I'm concerned, the bullfight is over.
You must watch the ring, senor.
Hmm? I beg your pardon?
It is very pleasant to feel your eyes upon me. I adore being stared at, but just now, don't you think it's a bit disrespectful to our friend Soldadito?
He's no friend of mine. He's a good friend of yours, Senorita. Permit me to inform you that he is my enemy.
He's very grateful, don't you think?
Mm.
That was also a graceful speech, Senor.
No, I didn't hear it.
I do not mean his dedication of the bull to me. No, I mean your little speech just now about his being your enemy if he's my friend.
Thanks.
I adore it when men fight over me.
Senorita, fighting over you would be a pleasure. When do I begin?
Whenever you like.
Who shall I take on? The man or the bull?
I think you need not bother about the bull. Look, Soldadito was about to make the kill. That was a beautiful kill, wasn't it, Mr.... What is your name?
Lyne, Harry Lyne, yes? Good kill.
I will call you Harry. The bull kneeled like a penitent at his feet. The beast seemed to be asking the torero's pardon.
It should have been the other way around.
You are already jealous. I adore that. Still, you must admit it was a glorious kill.
Great kill.
Tell me, Harry, what are you doing in Algeciras?
No, I'm just looking around.
And what are you looking for?
Well, no need to look any longer. I found it.
You make very pretty little speeches. I adore that. What is your profession?
Export, import mostly. I dabble in a lot of things.
What a pity.
Why?
I had allowed myself to hope you were a sailor.
Well, I have been a sailor. Will that help?
You have to have master's papers. I'm here with my yacht. Perhaps you have seen it in the harbor.
Oh, that big three-master with the black hull?
It's mine. We've lost our captain.
Oh?
It happened quite suddenly. I'm very sorry you're not the ship's captain. I would like to see you in the blue jacket with the gold buttons.
Would you believe it? I was a ship's captain.
I do not believe it.
But I have master's papers.
And where are they?
In Barcelona.
Oh, that is a bore, because we are leaving tomorrow.
Okay, I'll have somebody bring him down by train tonight.
In other words, you want the job?
In other words, I've got the job. I needed that job too much. And, of course, she knew it. I don't say she didn't like me, but there wasn't any doubt of it. That season, I was a little frayed about the seams. I phoned a friend of mine, a forger up in Barcelona, and made arrangements to cook up some papers for me and rush them down that night to the coast. Then I changed into my best shirt, the other one, and went to the best restaurant. She told me she was going there after the bullfight.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm sorry, but I just realized something. I don't know your name.
You do not know the lady's name?
You know Soldadito.
Of course he knows me. All Spain knows me. But what is this man doing at our table? He doesn't know you.
That's all right, old man. You can fix that. Introduce us.
I am the Baroness von Koenigwald. But you will call me Nadia.
Okay, Nadia. The next morning, I had the forged papers and the captain's job safely in my pocket. Truth was, of course, that I'd never been a sailor in my life. Unless you count the work I had to do as a deckhand when they found me stowed away on a short trip from Alexandria to Naples. But I needed that job bad. After one look into those huge cat's yellow eyes of hers, I would have jumped at any job she offered, whether I needed it or not.
You like the ship, Harry?
Oh, she's a beauty.
The steward will take your luggage to your cabin. Right now, you'll be needed on deck to superintend our departure.
By the way, where are we going?
To China.
Algeciras, Spain, to Hong Kong, China. That's quite a run for an old salt, whose only experience as a navigator consisted of piloting a canoe around the shallow end of Lake Winnebago, Wisconsin. Luckily, I thought to bring along a little help. The help's name, of all things in the world, was Sidney Carton. He was an ex-smuggler, rather an unemployed smuggler. I'd run into Sidney occasionally on various little capers in and around the Mediterranean. I figured he was crooked enough so I could trust him. His main attraction, besides a shock of dirty, carrot-colored hair and a glass eye, was a set of teeth like a rotten rake. Sidney was the only man I ever knew who could eat a tomato through a zither. But if Sidney was an eyesore, he was a gift from heaven as far as Captain Lyne was concerned. He was a real sailor, remember, and he covered up for me, doing all the real work while I walked around in my blue jacket with the gold buttons trying to look important. Naturally, Sidney wasn't doing this for love. But since I didn't have any money, I found it necessary to make him a few promises. I tell you, Sidney, this isn't a yacht at all.
Of course it's a yacht, Harry. This is a pleasure trip, pure and simple, and there's nothing in it for us.
I told you we were carrying contraband, old man, and I'll prove it.
What kind of contraband? Dope? Don't be a fool, Harry. Nobody smuggles dope into China. We're going off around the world just for the fun of it, and that ain't any fun.
Why had I been signed on with so few questions asked? Why had we left so quickly? Above all, what had happened to the original captain? It was queer enough, all right. But I was not telling Sidney the truth when I claimed that this was not a pleasure cruise. It was a pleasure, believe me. Then, one night, quite late it must have been, because I remember the moon was down, I was up on deck finishing a cigarette.
Harry?
Hmm?
Harry?
You still up, old man?
I want to talk to you, Harry.
Why don't you get some sleep, old man?
After all, one of us up.
You found it? What did you find?
The contraband. Under the floorboards. I know what we're carrying now, Harry. And it'd knock your eye out. Amazing. That's what it is, amazing.
Okay, old man, okay. Spill it.
Oh, I've got a whole lot to spill, Harry. A whole lot. Maybe I ought to begin with the explosives.
Explosives?
Very powerful they are, Harry. Enough to blow this ship to China.
So that's it.
Oh, huh? No, that's not the contraband. But let me ask you this, Harry. Did you ever notice that glass box in the chart house with a sign over it that says emergency only?
Hold it a minute.
Well, what's wrong?
I thought I heard something. Go on.
And I also found out about the captain, Harry.
Hmm?
Do you know who he was?
Take it one thing at a time, old man, please.
He was a naval officer for Hitler. Oh, very high and mighty mucky-mucky, the Nazi Navy he was. And you know his name?
What's his name got to do with that? I want to know what was
happening. I'm coming to that. But the captain's name, Harry, was von Koenigwald.
Von Koenigwald, but that's not just...
Right, Harry. He was her husband. And this is a rum go if ever I've seen one. Now, you take the explosives.
You take him. What I want to hear is
you
about...
You can't laugh it off, Harry. Try as you will, it just ain't funny. These explosives are all wired up and set to go, Harry. This isn't a ship. It's a bomb.
Shh.
And as for what we're smuggling...
Shut up. There is somebody listening. Stay there. I'll be back in a second.
Right.
Hello.
Hello, Nadia.
It's too hot to sleep, isn't it?
It's pretty hot, all right.
Keep me company, Harry. I'm lonely.
When I finally got to my own cabin, it was dawn. Didn't dare go looking for Sidney in any way. I was bone tired. They couldn't have let me sleep for more than an hour. Yes. Yes, what is it?
It's Matthew, sir, third officer.
And what do you want?
Well, sir, we're in sight of land and the old
course. Don't bother me. Ask Sidney. He knows the course.
Yes, but please, Captain, may I speak to you?
Okay. Now then, what is it?
It's Cotton I want to talk to you about, sir.
Well, what's wrong?
Well, I hardly know how to tell you, sir, but... He's gone.
Gone?
Yes, sir. We've searched everywhere, very thoroughly. But there's no doubt at all, sir. Mr. Cotton is not on this ship.
We made it into port. The trick was to keep that second mate from guessing that I couldn't tell the poop from a bosun's whistle. And also to keep all of us from crashing into a reef or turning upside down or something. Luckily, a little boat came out to meet us with the harbor pilot, since that's the regular procedure. I was very grateful, I can tell you, to be spared the embarrassment of having to swim for it. But it's a long haul from Hong Kong, China, to Panama City, and much as I like Nadja's company, I think I would have quit the job if I hadn't managed to make a deal with young Matthews, the second mate. I showed him some papers I happened to have, proving I was a secret operative from the FBI, and explained that he had to cover up for me the way Carton had been doing before. And by the time we got out of the canal on the Pacific end, I had everything pretty much under control. Would you like another drink?
No, thanks. Please go on, Mr.
Lime, Harry Lime. You see, I've got a reason for spinning this yarn. We'll come to that in a minute.
What happened to Cotton?
Well, Sidney? Nobody ever saw him again. Now, I'll skip the Pacific crossing now because nothing very important happened to us till we got to China. Unless you'd like to hear some more about those yellow eyes of Nadja.
What happened to von Koenigwald, the lady's husband?
I'm coming to that, old man. Just a second till I finish the drink. Okay. Well, it was late in March when we sighted Hong Kong. I'd learned how to imitate a sea captain by then, but I was more than a little anxious about my papers. It had been a nasty moment or two in Tahiti, and I was afraid the British authorities might spot the forgery. They might even have gotten some wireless message about me by then, but I still didn't know the purpose of the trip, you understand. Sidney hadn't gotten around to telling me about what the contraband was. before he disappeared. So my curiosity got the better of me as usual, and I stayed with the ship.
Captain, there's a speedboat coming alongside on the port bow.
It can't be the pilot. We've already taken him on.
Could be the harbor police, sir.
Is it good?
No, the speedboat is mine.
Oh?
You'll bring the ship into anchorage, Mr. Matthews, please. The captain and I are leaving now.
We are? Where are we going, honey?
I loathe that expression.
Okay, Nadia, but you have to answer my question.
There'll be plenty of time for that on the way.
We'd been riding upriver from Hong Kong for a good half hour before Nadia took it into her beautiful head to start talking.
I'm taking you to meet a very important man, Harry.
Huh?
You'd better know his name. It's General Wei.
A Chinaman?
He is Chinese, yes. General Wei was governor of one of the largest southern provinces, but of course that was...
Where are we meeting him? I think the mainland would be too hot for him now.
The general will be waiting for us on the junk.
A what?
A Chinese boat. I hope you're hungry, because there's bound to be quite a feast.
You mean to say we've come halfway around the world to keep a dinner engagement with a Chinese warlord?
Ours has been a very serious mission, Harry. And before you meet the general, I think you should know the truth.
So do I.
The general is planning to retrieve the lost provinces. Luckily, he is a wealthy man and had many investments in Tangier. It was my mission to bring him some of his wealth, which will be needed in the coming war. I think you have guessed what happened to the Baron von Königwald.
Yes, I think so. I think the Baron had a wife, and I think his wife bumped him off. Am I right, honey?
Please call me Nadia.
Okay, I think Nadia bumped him off.
He was a greedy man. I had reason to suspect that he planned to take part of the gold for himself.
Gold?
Yes, Harry. Gold bars purchased in Tangier. That's why I couldn't tell you earlier. It would have been too much of a temptation. The ship is lined with gold. $500,000 worth.
You know those Chinese ships? You know, the ones that look like some kind of cross between a Spanish galleon and a floating chop suey store? Pretty soon we came up to the biggest and gaudiest on the river. We were helped on board with a whole lot of Oriental fanfare, and I gathered that in a minute we were going to be presented to his nibs, the warlord himself. Nadia.
Yes?
There's just one thing I don't understand. No matter what price the old boy pays for that gold you brought him, I can't see why you bothered to cart it all the way across the Pacific. If you just told me before, I could have made a very nice deal for you in Mexico.
I did not bring the gold here for the profit, Harry. Here he comes.
Nadia, a thousand welcome.
Welcome to you, great one.
All my gratitude.
This is General Wei, Mr. Harry Lyme. Harry, may I present my father?
I know you've heard about shark's fins and bird's nest soup, but I'll bet you never knew a Chinese banquet can last 7.5 hours. Well, this one did, with eating all the way.
May I offer you some more ice wine, Captain Lyme?
I'm afraid I've had too much already, General. I know this may sound a little rude, but I kind of wondering, is Nadia really your daughter?
She is my only child.
That's funny. She doesn't look very Chinese.
No, Nadia's mother was a white Russian refugee. I met her in Chifu and made the mistake of marrying her. Nadia, however, is no mistake. She is my very precious jewel, Mr. Lyme. And I thank you for taking such good care of her.
Father! Father! And it's gone!
It got...
Get this speedboat!
What's happened? What's
the
happened?
The boat, Harry. Our boat with all the gold on it. It has vanished.
While we were in there stuffing ourselves, somebody had made off with a yacht. Word came to us it was going downstream toward the open sea.
It's my fault.
Well, why yours, Nadia?
That Matthews boy, the third mate, I should never have trusted him. I should never trust anybody.
But if you'd gone on stabbing your ship's officers and tossing him overboard, you'd have ended up without any crew.
There she is, ahead of us.
Ahoy there, Golden Fleece! Come about and prepare to receive us on board!
Can't you get any more speed, Harry?
Well, I'm punching a hole in the floor as it is.
Ahoy, Golden Fleece! This is your last chance! Come about or we open fire!
They won't answer.
They will now. Fire!
We had a dangerous-looking gang of hatchet men with machine guns on our launch, and they put up a good show. It wasn't long before we were next to the yacht, and I could see that a lot of damage had been done to the crew on board. It wasn't my crew. It was strangers.
Chinese.
We just have to storm over the side. Come on, Harry.
What's wrong, General? Are you hit?
That's all I get. Just give me your arm.
Okay. Here we go.
No sooner were we on deck than a mean-looking Mongol I hadn't noticed before, high up in the shrouds, bit off the end of a grenade and threw it smack into our launch.
Well, there goes everybody on our side. I guess this is it, Nadia.
Yes, Nadia, this is it.
Hey, wait a minute.
Come on, Chenikov.
Don't worry, Nadia, I am not a ghost.
Wait a minute, you're Nadia's husband.
Yes, happily for me, I was not as dead as she thought I was when she pushed me into the sea. You should have remembered. I am a good swimmer. Keep your hands in the air, please, all three of you.
Hans, how did you get here?
By plane. I couldn't guess your cause, and it was the easiest way. I just flew to Hong Kong and waited for
you. And now what are you going to do?
I'm going to do unto others as they would do unto me, Captain. If you happen to remember any prayers, you'd better start saying them, all three of you.
I'm wounded, Kennefeld, and dying. It doesn't matter about me, but Nadia's...
Father, I'm your true child. Do you imagine I would leave you now?
This is all very nice and noble, but what about me?
That's true, Harry. Hans, this man has done nothing to harm you. Let him swim for
you. He knows about the gold, Nadia, and I prefer to keep that as my own secret.
He also knows about something else, don't you, Harry? Carlton told me about it the night I killed
him.
What
do you mean?
There's a tiny glass window here by my hand. Carlton explained it to you. I heard him. The sign says for emergency only.
Yes?
Remember what he said, Harry. This isn't a ship. It's a bomb.
Thanks, Nadia. God bless you.
Shoot that man!
It's no use, Hans. He's a good swimmer, too. Goodbye, Harry.
Child.
You gave me a ring, Father, with the seal of our family. I still wear it. It's enough to break a pane of glass. Goodbye, Harry.
He's too far away to hear you.
He will hear this.
Sampan picked me up, but I almost drowned myself first, thinking about all that gold. $500,000 worth of it going down to the bottom of the sea. Have another gin sling?
Thanks again, Mr. Lyme.
Well, that's the story. Here's why I told it to you. I know the spot where this happened. I've got it marked exactly on the map. Cost about £20,000 to do the salvage, but that still leaves a pretty big margin of profit. And I just wondered if you'd be interested, sir, in investing.
Mr. Lyme, I wonder if you know who I am.
Well, not exactly.
I'm the Lord Constable and Chief of Police in this colony. We have a full dossier on your activities as a confidence man, and I thought I'd let you tell your tale because I wanted to know how you work. Lyme, that salvage wreck, it's the oldest of all the old skin games. I'm surprised that you're trying it on anybody, least of all a policeman. Good night now. And by the way, we'd be much happier here if you'd leave town. Within the next 24 hours, that is. Well, pip, pip.
Pip, pip.
Another gin sling, sir?
No. Oh. Just give me the check. Friends, I think you understand why I don't like telling that story. Whoever I tell it to usually turns out to be a cop. That isn't the worst of it. The worst of it is it's true. Well, pip, pip.
The Lives of Harry Lyme on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from October 12, 1951. You're listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. And now the Screen Director's Playhouse brings us back to the Napoleonic Wars for an adaptation of the 1949 motion picture, The Fighting O'Flynn, starring Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who portrayed the O'Flynn on the silver screen alongside Paul Frees, Ramsey Hill, and Raymond Burr, from April 7, 1950 on NBC.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, proudly presents... Screen Directors Playhouse, star Douglas Fairbanks Jr., production The Fighting O'Flynn, director Arthur Pearson... Hollywood Screen Directors present transcribed a play on high adventure. The motion picture story, The Fighting O'Flynn, starring Douglas Fairbanks in his original role of the O'Flynn with Meg Randall as Lady Benedetta. Ireland, 1797, was a hotbed of plot and counterplot. Intrigue and violence. Napoleon Bonaparte's wars seemed far away, but his agents in Ireland were setting the stage for further conquests.
I, O'Flynn of O'Flynn, was a soldier of fortune returning to the small green land of Ireland. There was one other passenger in the coach posting for Dublin that fine moonlit night. A lady. English, lovely, and most interestingly aloof. Your pardon, milady, but what did you say your name was?
I did not say.
She did not say, she does not say, but who can say that she will not say? Highwayman!
No, the spies and agents of Napoleon Bonaparte!
Bonaparte!
They're after me!
Is it so?
Faster, driver, faster!
We can't outrun horsemen. I've a better plan. Hold fast, milady. I opened the door and swung myself up to the coachman's seat. Grasping the reins from him, I swung the coach screechingly in a hard turn that sent the coach sidelong, blocking the road and tearing the wheels from it. Then I jumped to the ground and opened the door for Lady... She did not say to step into the room.
You madman, now they will catch us.
Get behind the coach, quickly.
Oh, you madman.
Driver, collect all those wheel spokes and pile them up beside me. Hurry.
They're coming.
I'm ready.
You can't fight them with those wagon spokes.
Shillelaghs now, milady. Crude but workable Irish shillelaghs. Now, I rose with an armful of heavy wagon spokes and let fly. So. 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 There. Another. There. All right, stand where you are, who's left afoot. We've pistols, too. Driver, select their three best horses. I'll keep these beggars covered. Well, the moment we were all mounted and still keeping the robbers covered, we wheeled off and raced into the night.
We should be starting for Dublin again, O'Flynn.
You're even prettier than I dreamed you'd be. What's your name?
Benedetta.
Benedetta. Benedetta, I like that. I like you.
Thank you, O'Flynn. But you mustn't talk so to me.
Oh?
I'm engaged to be married.
Engaged to be... I'll not admit it.
Lord Sedgemoor, in my father's service in Dublin.
Oh, it's a whim. I'll win you somehow. Lord Sedgemoor or not, A lord in your father's service?
My father is the Viceroy of Ireland.
Sure, it's the class I've stumbled onto this time.
Those highwaymen knew somehow that I was carrying a certain packet to the Viceroy.
Packet?
Yes. It contains a report of Bonaparte's plan to invade England by way of Ireland.
The devil it does. Let me take care of it.
Here.
Ah, now then.
And now then, I think we'd better ride for Dublin, O'Flynn.
We found His Excellency, the Viceroy of Ireland, was in the palace garden with Lord Sedgemoor, Benedetta's fiancé. Sedgemoor was very handsome, to be sure. But I felt rather wretched in the stomach when he took my Benedetta in his arms and kissed her. And the Viceroy looked very grave as he finished reading the documents we had brought him.
Sedgemoor, this is most serious. Bonaparte's best troublemaker, General Van Dronk, has been sneaked into an old abandoned castle on the coast. Castle Knockmore.
Yes, I know the mossy heap of stone.
But do you know Van Dronk?
I do, by reputation only. A bitter and moody man, but a great soldier. Nevertheless, I shall myself recruit a force to march on Van Dronk.
Accepted, O'Flynn.
But Castle Knockmore will take a regiment of trained troops, not amateurs, to capture it.
Then see to it, Sedgemoth, at once.
Your Excellency, Benedetta.
Goodbye, Philip.
Wait, Sedgemoth. Join me on the terrace. I have some suggestions to offer, if I may.
O'Flynn, I just want to thank you.
Benedetta, I have so much to say to you.
Please, not now. Philip will be looking for me.
I have been looking for you ever since my grandfather first rested eyes on my grandmother.
Good morning to you, O'Flynn of O'Flynn.
Benedetta, wait!
I must join Philip and my father.
Oh, come down those steps again, but a moment.
No.
But if I rhyme you a rhyme for each step of that stair, will you then come down to me?
Well, I... perhaps.
Oh. Oh, my gift of gab, befriend me now. If patient you'll be and not mark the time, each step you descend, I'll rhyme your rhyme.
One.
I've come here to Dublin, sworn to your king. Admit for a start that that's quite a thing.
Two.
I'll do all such deeds as you may entreat, and all that I'll do, I'll lay at your feet. There's no more enchanted a man ever grew than I, standing here, because I love you. My hand, here it is, your heart put therein, protected from hurt by Flynn of O'Flynn.
One more step, Jingler.
My rhyme may not be as good as my prayers, but yet you have come to the foot of the stairs.
Ingenious, O'Flynn. If not exactly immortal.
Now, when will you marry me?
It's useless. Oh. Your words are very nimble. Very nimble and very Irish.
Give me your scarf.
Why?
For my regimental flag.
O'Flynn, you're incorrigible.
A kiss, then.
No.
Yes.
O'Flynn,
I insist.
You shouldn't have done that. Goodbye, O'Flynn.
Hendrik, we're in a stew. A foul stew.
First I lose your Lady Benedetta on the highway, thanks to that Irishman, and now you're in a foul stew. Explain, Sedgemoth.
Until Bonaparte invades Ireland, my usefulness to him is in serving the Viceroy.
True, Sedgemoth.
But now the Viceroy has ordered me to capture Castle Knockmore, to capture Van Dronk, our own man.
Then capture Van Dronk.
What will Bonaparte say to that?
I will arrange with Bonaparte for the surrender of Castle Knockmore to your lordship. He will take his place, ready to open the gates of Ireland when Bonaparte is ready to invade and to reward you for your judicious treason.
Down the coast, frowning on the Irish Sea, stood Castle Knockmore, ably and grimly commanded by General Van Dronk, the bloody saturnine hero of Barta. On a plain west of Knockmore, Sedgemoth's regiment waited and took no action. I wondered why. I hadn't seen Benedetta for 2 weeks, and again, I wondered why. So thoroughly likable a fellow as I was. Until one evening, as I left a staff meeting at Sedgemoth's headquarters, a carriage rolled to the entrance with Lady Benedetta about to step out of it. Benedetta!
Why, O'Flynn.
Come in the evening, come in the morning, come when expected, come without warning.
Please go.
Thousands of welcomes you'll find here before you, and the oftener you come, the more I'll adore you.
Why are you here?
We're a staff meeting with Lord Sedgemoth, in which your fiancée made the bold decision to remain rooted to this plane.
You're not to criticize Philip, and you're not to see me.
Why?
The pattern of my life is fixed, and it can't be changed by your lilting Irish phrases.
Oh.
Your words and your deeds don't match, O'Flynn.
Oh, and what is this now, me darling?
You criticize Philip, but can you do any better? No. You're a trifler, a braggart, and an empty kettle.
Braggart, is it? Empty kettle?
Oh, I'm sorry, O'Flynn, but I just...
Go, Benedetta. Greet your leaden soldier in there, whose tailored tactical trousers have their share of lead in them. Before this night is over, I'll take Castle Knockmore for you. Alone.
listening to the Screen Director's Playhouse production of The Fighting O'Flynn, starring Douglas Fairbanks and presented by RCA Victor. Here's a word you'll hear a lot this Sunday for describing the hat and dress combinations Milady wears in the Easter parade. It's the word ensemble. You'll also hear that word ensemble wherever people are talking about the newest and America's favorite television, the handsome, practical RCA Victor Tele-Ensemble. The Tele-Ensemble is Deluxe 12.5-inch RCA Victor eyewitness television in a handsome, deep maroon, modern metal cabinet. It's called a Tele-Ensemble because it's a compact table model television set that nevertheless rests on its own legs of beautiful matching wood. Two more important features are the built-in antenna and the phono jack. Picture quality is tops, bright, clear, and steady. And the RCA Victor Tele-Ensemble is a terrific dollar-for-dollar value. Only $229.95 suggested list price, plus small federal tax, of course, and only slightly higher in some locations. Yes, the television set you'll want in your home is RCA Victor's Tele-Ensemble. Now, back to the Screen Director's Playhouse production of The Fighting O'Flynn, starring Douglas Fairbanks in his original role of the O'Flynn, with Meg Randall as Lady Benedetta.
I had no plan, only a purpose without a method, to capture Castle Knockmore from within. A raised drawbridge hung over the moat around the castle, black and monstrous in the thick darkness.
Halt! Who's there?
Captain O'Flynn of His Majesty's Dragoons. Deserting. I have news for General Van Dronk.
Enemy deserter! Lower the drawbridge!
Your coming here on the pretense of being a deserter has a faint glimmer of imagination. A spark of light in the darkness of my boredom.
Thank you, General.
The military information you bring is worthless. It turns out you are a stupid, torpid, uninspired, backward, untutored, charmless, harmless, and in every other detail as much a lurching oaf as any man.
You don't admire mankind, eh?
Can you at least play chess?
Chess? Is it chess you're saying? Well, in County Wicklow, I am esteemed and remembered as the man who, as a lad of three, conquered...
Sit down.
Yes, Mon General.
Never mind the Mon General. I'm not French.
Oh.
I am simply Van Dronk, supremely bored. You are unarmed.
Quite.
I will place this pistol on the table between us. Beat me at chess, and it is yours.
The pistol.
I lose, you shoot me.
Ah.
You lose, I shoot you.
Oh.
Play.
But, where is the chessboard?
You have a mind, have you not?
Well, I'm fond of thinking so.
Then imagine a chessboard and chessmen. Is man so earthbound that he cannot even dream a chessboard? Play.
Very well. My pawn to the queen's fourth square.
My pawn to the queen's fourth square.
Yeah. Pawn to the queen's bishop's fourth square.
Pawn to the king's fourth.
My queen's pawn captures your pawn.
Pawn to the queen's fifth.
Knight to the king's bishop's third square.
Pawn to the queen's bishop's fourth.
Pawn, knight. I can't remember our moves.
Yes. Your pawn to the queen's fourth, my pawn to the queen's fourth. Your pawn to the queen's bishop's fourth, my pawn to the king's fourth. Your queen's pawn captured my pawn to the queen's fifth. Your knight to the king's bishop's third, my pawn to the queen's bishop's fourth. Your move.
Oh, yes, thank you. My move. My rook captures your queen.
My rook to the bishop's eighth and check. Come in.
General Van Dronk, dispatch from Bonaparte.
Move O'Flynn.
O'Flynn?
Shh, my queen to the Queen's Square.
General, this man is a spy, an Irishman and a spy.
I know. Plays a hard game of chess, too. I resign.
You do?
Congratulations, O'Flynn.
The gun is mine. Don't move.
General, you let him get that gun away from you.
Do not be dull. You won it fairly.
Sedgemoth, read your dispatch from Bonaparte.
If I refuse?
I'll shoot you and take it from you.
Better read it, Sedgemoth.
Very well. To General Van Dronk, after a token resistance, you are to surrender Castle Knockmore to Lord Sedgemoth, who will facilitate the impending landing of French forces in Ireland. Signed, Bonaparte, First Consul.
Lord Sedgemoth, I arrest you for high treason.
The pistol is not loaded.
What?
Pull the trigger. Go ahead.
The devil.
Arrest the O'Flynn.
O'Flynn, when this castle falls to me tomorrow, you will be found here. As British commander, I will order you shot as a traitor.
A pretty business, Sedgemoth.
Shot, O'Flynn. Day after tomorrow, at dawn.
Outside that window.
Benedetta.
O'Flynn.
Benedetta, my darling.
Come in. You shouldn't have come back to the palace.
Very curious. Surely you know I was shot this dawn, but you don't exclaim that I'm alive and unhurt. Only that I shouldn't have come back here.
But they know of the hoax now, and this time they'll surely kill you.
Ah, Benedetta, my darling. It's mischief bribing firing squads to fire mock volleys. But since you did it for the love of me, I lovingly forgive you.
Please, please go.
I'll not leave until you know I'm not a traitor, Benedetta.
Oh, I no longer know who or what to believe. I only know that I want you to live. Oh, I wish that...
What do you wish?
I wish your arms weren't so tender and strong and the right size to hold an unwilling woman in them.
How unwilling is she, really?
I have my pride and my honor and a duty to the man I've promised to marry.
So be it. I've wooed you faithful and I've wooed you true, and no has always been your answer. But now I'm going to see this through before your eyes.
What are you doing?
Holding this bit of blank writing paper from your desk, m'lady.
Oh, Flynn, you can still go through the window.
No.
Please.
Come in.
Benedetta, my dear. Oh, Flynn.
My dear Sedgemoth.
Benedetta. This time you will not escape death, Irishman. What have you to say for yourself?
First of all, sir, it's not me that's the traitor, but our stylish friend here, Lord Sedgemoth.
Impertinence, absurdity.
He's under orders from Bonaparte to surrender Knockmore to the Frenchies, and I can prove it.
These are serious charges, O'Flynn.
Ridiculous charges.
Are they? Then here. Here's the letter, Your Excellency, from Bonaparte to Sedgemoth, which I had the luck to filch from Sedgemoth's pocket.
How did you...
Your hand goes to your breast pocket, Sedgemoth.
But this paper is blank.
That one, yes. But not the one in his lordship's pocket, I'll warrant.
Whatever this Irish hothead tells you, Your Excellency, is...
Then show him the letter in your pocket. Show him or be called the guilty man if you do not.
Show him the letter, Philip.
Or be declared under arrest.
Under arrest? If you capture me, that is...
Stop him!
Yes, Your Excellency, stop me!
Guard! Castle Knockmore! He's gone to signal the French ships! The drawbridge was up and under heavy guard when I again arrived at the gloomy castle. I saw a torch flickering high on the seaward battlement, the rocket platform. Wearily, my heart in my throat, I started up the thick ivy, clothing the sheer walls of Knockmore Bastion. Slowly, ever so slowly, I lifted my head over the parapet. Sedgemoth, torch in hand, peered seaward. A signal rocket at the ready. Two guards, no choice but to be ruthless. I took aim with my one pistol. Reversing the empty pistol, I flung it shillelagh fashion at the other guard and caught him squarely on the brow, and he went down as I scrambled over the parapet just in time to meet Sedgemoth's naked sword with mine. Traitor.
Fool.
O'Flynn, more correctly.
Of O'Flynn.
Break.
The climb up the ivy tired me.
Break, I say. And bleed.
Oh.
Touché, Irishman. Blood?
A drop. On guard, traitor.
I warned you.
The climb wearied me.
No, O'Flynn, it killed you.
Enough, my lord?
Enough. Enough.
Over the horizon somewhere were coming Bonaparte's great men of war. But they could wait and wait and wait some more for a signal that would never come. It was nearly dawn when I came back to Dublin Palace, and Lady Benedetta waiting for me in the garden at our marble rhyming steps.
Oh, Flynn, is it over?
Oh, Benedetta, my darling. I've a trifling wound which in no way influences the size of my arms for holding a willing woman.
Flynn of O'Flynn, the woman is unwilling no longer.
Oh, Benedetta.
Dublin Palace, 6 o'clock. The sun is risen, and all's well.
Aye.
This is Jimmy Wallington speaking. You have just heard the last act of The Fighting O'Flynn, and our star, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., with our guest screen director, Arthur Pearson, will be with us in just a moment. Next Friday, the day belongs to baseball, as another great star brings one of his most amusing performances to the Screen Director's Playhouse. Our story is It Happens Every Spring, and recreating his original role will be Ray Milland with screen director Lloyd Bacon. Now, here again is tonight's star, Douglas Fairbanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a kind of delicate interrelationship between a screen director and a film story. For instance, take The Fighting O'Flynn. The director made a motion picture out of the story, and the story made an Irishman out of the director. This last took some doing in view of the fact that he was born in Norway. Now I'd like you to meet him, an accomplished stage and screen director, actor and writer, and my director in The Fighting O'Flynn, Arthur Pearson.
Thank you, Doug. But I think we all came out of the O'Flynn with a touch of shillelagh in our hearts.
And better men we are for it, too.
But, Doug, I hear you've deserted the Emerald Isle for Central Europe in your next picture, State Secret.
That's right, Arthur. State Secret is out of Ireland and into modern dress for an exciting tale of totalitarianism. But for all that, we're still a couple of celluloid sons of Dublin. And here's my thanks for a beautiful job of directing in The Fighting O'Flynn. You made it easy for the actors to tell the story, but I suppose that's because you were an actor and writer yourself.
Well, I tried. As a matter of fact, Doug, I used to write for the radio, a program called The Lincoln Highway.
I remember. Any other shows, Arthur?
Well, once in a while, I'd write one of those interviews where the actor talks to somebody after the drama.
Oh, yes, I've heard of those.
You know, the ones that always ends with the people saying, good night?
Good night.
Good night, Doug.
Good night, Arthur. Good night, everyone.
And good night to you, Douglas Fairbanks and Arthur Pearson. Remember next Friday, Ray Milland in It Happens Every Spring with screen director Lloyd Bacon. Brought to you by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television. The Fighting O'Flynn was presented through the courtesy of the Fairbanks Company of Universal International Studios, now releasing One Way Street, starring James Mason, Marta Torin, and Dan Duryea. Meg Randall can now be seen with Marjorie Main and Percy Kilbride in Ma and Pa Kettle Go to Town, a Universal International picture. Included in tonight's cast were Ramsey Hill, Dan O'Herlihy, Raymond Burr, Frank Gerstle, Paul Frees, and Frank Barton. The Fighting O'Flynn was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger, and original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. The Screen Director's Playhouse is produced by Howard Wiley, with dramatic direction by Bill Karn. Portions of the program were transcribed. You are invited to listen again next Friday when RCA Victor presents
Screen Director's Playhouse, star Ray Milland, production It Happens Every Spring, director Lloyd Bacon.
Stay tuned for Jimmy Durante. He's the great Rupert, you know, on NBC.
The Screen Director's Playhouse, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 7th, 1950 on NBC. And so closes this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.